quorum here before I can take votes on bills. Though. Okay, ready to go?
Okay, good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, March 19, 2008. We have presentations today from the constitutional officers regarding the budget, governor's budget recommendations, and then we do have three bills that we need to process for the Finance Committee. We'll start with the State Auditor's Office. Auditor Otto is here, I believe, and welcome back to the Budget Division. As we know, the governor just made recommendations for what was it? Was it 3 or 4%? 4%. Didn't identify where he thought they should come from. He just made across the board recommendations, respecting the independence, the constitutionality of the offices. But he still made the recommendation. So we need to find out what that would mean to each one of these constitutional offices. So, Auditor Otto, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Rebecca Otto, State Auditor, and we are here to address the governor's budget recommendation, and I believe it was to cut all the offices by 4% for fiscal year 2009. So, first of all, I've got a brief PowerPoint presentation. It's very brief. In fact, I like being brief in committees. I want to get to the point of the whole thing. So, our office oversees the spending of over $20 billion per year, $40 billion for the biennium by local governments, which is a whole lot of money. And we do this through auditing, investigations, reporting, and educating. And the next slide is, okay, good. 85% of our costs are recovered through fees and reimbursements, or what we call offsets. So we have very little impact on the general fund. And you can see the small, it's 15% of our budget is general fund, $1.4 million. So fiscal year 2009, the next slide, is a breakdown of the portion recovered by fees and reimbursements or offsets versus general fund by division. So audit practice, for instance, is dark blue. All of it is recovered through fees and reimbursements. Most divisions are... except for Constitutional Office and Legal Special Investigations, and there's a reason. Constitutional Office, not very big. Our budget's quite small, actually. But that's to support my work on six state boards, including State Board of Investment, Executive Council, MHFA, PARA, Rural Finance Authority, Public Land Exchange. And then any trainings we do, any of the other work. Legal Special Investigations, the reason why we don't get reimbursements for that is because there's a chapter in state law, 609.456, I believe, that requires that local officials report to the Office of the State Auditor when they suspect or know of misuse of public funds, basically, in a nutshell. And so we want them to be able to come to our office and not worry about having to pay for it so that it would have a further financial impact on their entity. So it's very important for us to not charge for services when someone discovers something's gone wrong so that we can get in on a timely basis and stop the loss of funds. The next slide shows you basically that 89% of our budget is personnel. It's people. So it's almost all of our budget. We don't own buildings. We rent. That's 5% of our budget. Communications is tiny. We almost don't issue any paper reports anymore unless requested. we have to keep up with professional technical stuff because of the nature of our work. Travel is tiny as well, and we cover the whole state. So anyway, it's people, and... we'll go to the next slide. So if we were to be cut by $369,360, which is the 4%, in our budget is a little over $9 million fiscal year 2009, with our offsets and reductions, all you'll get out of us, or the net benefit to the general fund, is $80,544, not $369,000, $80,000. So how can that be? Because we are covered by fees and reimbursements, and that gets taken too. So the final slide is it's a significant loss to the Office of the State Auditor to have a 4% reduction. We have a very small, very lean office, a budget reduction of $369,360 gives the general fund the net benefit of $80,000, and we lose five positions. Now, five positions, that's a whole division. So if we go to the next slide, we can review again what our divisions are. And our pension division oversees pension funds, and we certify for fire aid for our fire relief associations. Operations management helps our office work, getting our bills paid, making sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. Job Z, that's an oversight function we were given. That's not even going to be one person, so that wouldn't cover it. You could wipe that out easily. I have to serve on the six state boards I serve on. Audit practice, we got cut in 2003 quite severely to the point that there's certain work we don't do anymore. One of the things I wanted to leave you all with, because I know you've got other presentations, is that we do have some certified fraud examiners in our office, and one of them went to the certified fraud examiners and said, are there articles on when there's an economic downturn, what happens with fraud? I've got a pile of articles right here that talk about that you need to be very, very careful in an economic downturn because there is an increase in fraud. And at the end of the day in local governments, when they have funds, we want to make sure that no one's misusing the funds because quite often we don't get them back when they're gone. And we saw a case of over $300,000 that was misused, stolen for gambling in an economic development district. And it's really important for us. We're already cut too thin to be able to really get at all the things we should be getting at. And so in an economic downturn, we should actually be adding staff to deal with the workload. I talked to our legal special investigations folks, and they said that there's an increase right now in people reporting. So, and I also want to say that because of the nature of our work, it's quite conservative, and it's really around good, prudent fiscal management and being very detail-oriented. Our office is already that way. We don't have fat because of the nature of our work. We're very disciplined. And so... I'm hoping that our office is cut zero only because it's an oversight function, and I don't believe you should cut oversight. If you're going to have government, you've got to have oversight. And the cuts in 2003 should never have occurred to our office, but I wasn't there at that time to tell you about this. So, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum. Are there any questions of the state auditor? Questions? Okay, I think we got an idea of what the proposal would mean to your office. Okay, anything further you want to provide with us before you leave?
Only to strongly, I know we're in a difficult time, and I have been in my office working on efficiencies to see if there's anything more we can do, and know that we have very highly professional staff that do incredible work to provide oversight. We've done everything we can to be more efficient. But I don't know there's a whole lot more we can do. And again, if we were to lose, we cannot afford to lose a single body in our office. That's what I told you guys last budget cycle. I just asked for keeping the people I had. I didn't ask for any increases. And so again, I'm really strongly, hopefully urging you all and hope that you won't allow cuts to occur to our office because it will be devastating. So thank you for your consideration.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Pappas.
Let me clarify this. The governor's proposed cut is not just to the general fund dollars, but to also a portion of all the fees that the auditor charges?
Well, I think he's proposing a 4% reduction to the office, and I think what the state auditor is saying that if you cut out 4%, she's only got basically people in the office, and by reducing her people, you also reduce the money that they goes to the general fund because, these people bring in fees.
Right.
So cutting it 4% isn't cutting 4%.
Sense.
I think that's where.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, another important point is, because I did have a discussion with the governor, he said, well, what happens if we don't touch any of the fees and reimbursements and just go after the general fund part? I said, well, that takes my legal and special investigation. It will wipe out my legal and special investigations division. We have to have those people there. I've got one special investigator. I've got, you know what I mean? We review audits. They write the legal audit compliance guide, which other CPAs use. I mean, it is so bare bones. I've tracked their workload. I mean, we would lose one full division, and we would not be able to do our work. So that's the problem. So if we spread it out across the whole thing, then what you end up with, they cut us by 369, and you're only going to net 80, and it's devastating to our function.
Okay.
Okay.
Cyril Sean.
I got it.
Mr. Chair. I have a question, Ms. Otto, on the fee schedule. Is that something that you can look at modifying your fee schedule and reimbursements and those kinds of things?
Utter?
Mr. Chair, Utter? Senator Olsen, can you provide maybe some more information? Do you mean, because what we do is, like, let's say when we audit a local entity, they pay us for our time to do that work, so we get reimbursed for that. We also get LGA money because they, the legislature thought it appropriate that since we're working with local government that we get a portion of LGA money. So that funds some of our work, like Government Information Division and other places. And then the we also get reimbursements, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, through state fire aid. Do we get a portion of that to do our work to oversee our Fire Relief Association pension funds. So we get different fees and reimbursements depending on what the work is to do our work. And does that answer your question?
Is your question, should they charge more for their fees then? Or
basically, yes.
Okay. Can you charge more for your fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, right now we charge local governments fees for audits. So we directly audit most counties and then the three cities of the first class, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. What I will tell you, and I'm sure they would be happy to share with you as well, any local government entity right now is concerned about audit costs. We're always concerned about audit costs, but accounting and auditing standards change regularly, and there's been some changes recently that have increased audit costs already. Now, these folks only have so much in their pocketbook, and so everyone's feeling pressure right now, and if we were to increase our fees to them, it's going to put more pressure on their monies, and they're already having issues with property taxes. There's issues with the housing market, and I'm sure houses losing value and all kinds of things. So I don't know that increasing fees would help our situation, and I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'd like to defer to Matt Lindemann from my office, if that's okay.
Sure. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget Finance Technology for the State Auditor's Office. The audit fees are based on, the rates we charge for audit fees are based on a schedule we provide to the Department of Finance. They need to approve the fees, the rates we charge, and those are usually based on us recovering the costs associated with audits. So based on the way I understand the statute is now, we're not allowed to over-recover. Our goal is to make sure that we recover what we've charged in audit fees, what our audit costs are, plus any, but not to over-recover. So it's always kind of a goal to make sure that we cover just what the costs of auditing are.
Sir Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for instance, when we had negotiated settlements for increased salaries, then you would present that to, the Department of Revenue? Well, whomever would approve an increase in what you charge, because obviously then you've had an increase in what your labor cost is, so it would be probably a justifiable expense to increase that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, or yeah. Senator, when we do our audit, when we do the calculus on audit costs, that is automatically considered as part of the cost, is any increases in labor agreements for increased costs or step increases. Those are all factored in as part of coming up with the rates we charge local governments.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the State Auditor's Office? None? Okay, well, thank you, Auditor Otto.
Thank you.
Presentation. And then next we'll look at the Attorney General's Office. We have Rebecca Sparks here? Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Rebecca Spartz, and I am the Director of Administration for the Attorney General's Office. Just as the state auditor provides a service, and her office is made up of salaried people, the Attorney General's budget is 85% salary. That means that a cut of $1 million, which is what's proposed, would eliminate about 20 positions, depending on which positions we had to eliminate. The Attorney General's office believes that it has provided good value in terms of the services that it provides. We represent all state agencies and boards, and we also work with consumers to recover expenses, or basically when a consumer has been scammed and has lost money, we try to go in and negotiate a return of money, or to do a settlement against the company that's defrauding consumers. I went back to look at 2007, calendar year 2007, to see what benefit the state has had from our office. We've returned $11 million to the general fund. We defend states against claims. And in difficult economic times, such as we're experiencing now, there are many more lawsuits filed against the state of Minnesota. In 2007, we saved $180 million that agencies would have to pay out if we did not defend them in particular lawsuits. We returned $4 million to counties and local units of government. Basically, this would be in the human services cost of care area or bankruptcies. Our Medicaid fraud unit recovered $5 million. We returned $11 million to consumers. And because we represent small agencies and consumers, we testify when various utilities are asking for rate increases. And in 2007, we contributed something like $25 million that businesses and individuals would have paid in increased costs for utilities.
Ms. Sparks, you indicated the proposed cut would possibly affect 20 positions, but I don't have a feel right now. How many people are there in the Attorney General's office, and how many of them are lawyers as opposed to support personnel and so forth? How would these 20 positions impact the whole office operations?
Mr. Chair, in our office, currently we have 355 people. 158 are attorneys. We have 85 support people, and then the remainder are legal assistants who could be investigators, paralegals. I'm classified as a legal assistant, so administrative people. And in looking at doing a cut, we would be looking at, for instance, our support staff, each individual supports four attorneys. So we would have to look at, if we're taking out, let's say, five attorneys, how many legal assistants would we have to also take out? Because what we're kind of trying to do is, if it's $1 million, to have the impact be as small as possible to state agencies, but we would still have to definitely cut positions.
I recall in last year's budget, we tried to provide you additional funding so you could hire more people. Were all those positions filled, and are you facing possible attrition where you can have some retirements of people leaving that those positions aren't filled? I mean, where are we from last year to now, and how does it look going forward?
Mr. Chair, we did use the money that the legislature gave us last year to fill some additional positions. At the current time, I was just mentioning to somebody else who was sitting here that there are a lot of people delaying their retirement, either because financially they've had, you know, a reversal in whatever they had invested in, and also the cost of health care once you've retired. So we do have quite a few people who are of retirement age right now who have not retired at this point. So in terms of attrition that way, maybe two or three people in the next year will retire.
Okay. So if, I mean, if there is a reduction to your funds, whether it's 1% or 2% or 3% or 4% or whatever it comes out to be, where do you, does the Attorney General's office have any idea where that would be? I mean, would it be lawyers, would it be support staff, both? How is it going to affect your operations?
Mr. Chair, it would be a combination.
Okay.
I'm estimating that it would be six attorneys, and the remainder would be support staff and legal assistants. The legal assistant group is the largest group that we have. And we might have to go to, instead of a secretary serving four individuals, she might have to have five assigned to her.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions of the Attorney General's office? General Sean.
Mr. Chair, are there any revenues that are reimbursable for you that you charge for customers or anything like that? Or
We don't charge outside entities, but we do have partner agreements with some agencies who have funds that are not in the 100 fund. And so consequently, we do have a billing rate of $101 an hour, which we do charge to them. However, that money is not part of the general fund budget. and it depends on each agency determining each year how much in hours of legal service they think they're going to need from our office.
Bill Sean.
A follow-up. Same question I asked the auditor's office. With a salary increase negotiated last year, do you adjust that billing rate?
When we're developing our billing rate, we develop it for the biennium. And so consequently, what we're charging now and what we'll charge in fiscal year 09 has been set at $101. We will then relook at our billing rate, and it may go up. We would notify all partner agencies of that next September.
Okay. Any other questions of the Attorney General's office? There should be none. Thank you, Ms. Spartz. Then we have the Secretary of State's office, Mr. Duran. Welcome back to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Tom Duran, Assistant Secretary of State. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to discuss our budget with you today. The Secretary of State's general fund budget is $6.5 million, and the proposed 4% cut would be $260,000. The Secretary of State's budget is primarily tied up in running elections and the overall elections administration infrastructure, as well as processing business and financial transactions. The staff make up about 75% of the budget, and the computer operations cost is the other big chunk. So anything we do is going to have an impact on our administration of elections or business and financial processing in one way or another. Hard to get away from that when that's the biggest part of your budget. Elections also is tied up a little bit in terms of its funding because of the Help America Vote Act, which has a requirement that the state maintain its level of effort for election spending. So what that means is that when we entered into this agreement to get the federal funding, we had to agree to continue to spend a certain amount on elections into the future so that we didn't just supplant those state funds with federal funds. So we are somewhat limited in what we can do within the elections budget. In addition, as you well know, 2008 is going to be one of the most active elections year that we probably ever experience, and so we're somewhat hesitant to want to make cuts in the area of elections during the 2009 budget cycle. In our business services area, which handles, as you are well aware, all of the filings of businesses, we also handle all the Uniform Commercial Code and the crop lien filings, which facilitate commerce within the state. And we take in about $13 million in fees for all of those filings. That $13 million goes directly into the general fund. We don't hold any of that back for our operations. So if we were to cut significantly in the business services area, that could have the unintended consequence of reducing the amount of money that we would take into the general fund. So again, we're hesitant to want to make cuts in that area. So that leaves a very narrow portion of what we do. Some smaller programs that we have, the Save at Home program, the Open Appointments program, the publication of the legislative manual, those are some of the bigger chunks within that smaller part of the budget. And the Secretary of State serves on a number of boards and commissions, and those obviously take some time. We oversee the Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force, and we've been asked to take on the Mortgage Monitoring Task Force. Again, all of those things take time. So if we were to take our cut entirely in that area, the budget would represent about 30% of that, and certainly would make that those different functions very difficult to continue to maintain. So spreading it out over the entire budget, we're likely to impact our ability to handle the election, our ability to handle the business and financial filings, as well as some of these other things. And we're looking probably in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 employees, plus reducing some pamphlets and the materials we provide to local elections officials, who in turn would have to get those somewhere else and pay for them probably at a greater cost than what we can provide. And so we would make some reductions in the legislative manual and things like that to bring the cost down, but it would have a significant impact because we are so limited in the areas that we have any flexibility in cutting. So that's where we're at in terms of thinking about how we would approach this.
Earl Sane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are some of these materials that you print available electronically so you could, you know, advertise that it's available electronically? And
download them online?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Osteen, yes, a number of them are, but the overall number of discretionary items that we have amount to about $26,000 in forms, and a big chunk of that is the I voted stickers. So the I voted stickers would probably be one we would have to give up. It probably would have the biggest savings and least impact. So that's a nice thing that we do, and I think it's been successful in reminding voters on election day when they see the I voted sticker, oh, today is election day, and I think it's been successful. We started it about 25 years ago under Secretary Groh, and it's really something I think a lot of people have come to expect. But again, it's something that's a little bit of a luxury.
Other questions on that? I remember giving an I voted sticker to my son when he was like 10 years old going to school. So he goes to school and I voted, you know, so which raised some questions, but that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. Sarah Blank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask the question you asked earlier from the Attorney General's office. Is how big is your staff? You were talking about a cut of maybe 5 or 6 people. How many people do you currently have on staff?
In the general fund, we have about 60 people. So this would be in the 10% range. When you start laying off people, the things, it's hard to determine ahead of time because you start laying off and people can bump and then if they have vacation payoff, and we pay as other state agencies do unemployment compensation directly, so to lay off one person you don't really get the savings of a full person, and in addition you don't know who you're going to be able to lay off, you know, depending upon how the bumping goes. So it's hard to tell ahead of time exactly who ends up gone and how much it saves you and how many you've got to cut to get to your target.
Okay. Other questions? Anything further? Anything else? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Durand. And I think we've now pretty much covered most of what we have in our area. We heard from the governor's office just, you know, earlier, and I didn't see a need to bring it back in. Now, they're in a unique situation where they can also bring in people from agencies to kind of backfill. If they make a cut, they can also pull somebody in from an agency. So I don't know how those numbers work in that office, but that's something we'll just have to keep in mind as we're looking at this. Ultimately, the legislature is going to be part of, you know, any cuts, too. I mean, if we're cutting other agencies, the legislature is going to get there, too. Now, the House is going to have to figure out what they're going to do. We have the LCC, which are the House and Senate, you know, the things that serve all of us, like the Revisor's Office, the various commissions. For those of you who weren't around when we went through some real tough times in the Senate, we did some budget cutting a couple of years ago. I think Senator Rest and Senator Pappas remember some of the legislative cuts. We have some newspapers delivered to our offices every day. You know, that was an easy cut. We used to have a big army of pages on the Senate floor. We got rid of them. In fact, the pages we have now do double duty. They work in the offices, and then they work on the floor. And that's some savings. We got way back on travel, which did limit, you know, some legislators' abilities to go to conferences and so forth. But so I don't know what ultimately the legislative cuts, you know, will translate to, but those are things we're going to have to work out, and we'll know something at some point down the road on that. So The questions are on the overall things. Next week, then, we'll actually have to start working on things. I have not been given a target or anything like that. I mean, we're just trying to, I think the Finance Committee is trying to work out, you know, just what all these numbers mean and, you know, what we're to do. But I haven't been told, you know, you have a certain amount to go for. I mean, we've got the governor's recommendations, and we'll just have to build off of that. So, anything else? Okay, well, we have a couple of bills that are on today. Is Senator Mary Olson still here? She was in the room a minute ago. Okay. Well, Senator Larson, did you want to present your bill?
Sure.
Senate File 3649, Help America Vote Account.
Okay.
And I believe there's an amendment.
The here. A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
There's an A1 amendment, and I believe, yeah, this is the first stop of the bill, so Senator Larson moves the A1 amendment as an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that he desires to proceed with it. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 3649 allows for the Secretary of State to transfer funds from the general fund in their budget to the Help America Vote Act account to meet some federal requirements as it relates to interest payments and state match. I have Ms. Beth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office who can testify and provide additional information.
Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Beth Frazier with the Secretary of State's office. Every state that receives Help America Vote Act funds is audited by the Election Assistance Commission, and we have just gone through our audit. And they found two things that they wish had been done differently. One is that the state had to provide a 5% match, and part of it was this $310,000, and they believe that it should have been the match should have been made in 2004 when we originally received the funds, not last year as part of this budget. And so they want us to put into the HAVA account the interest that would have been earned if the money had been in the account since 2004. The other thing that they found is that the 310,000 number was off by $619.93, and so we have to transfer that amount plus the amount of interest that would have been earned on that. So this gives us the authority to transfer the needed amount. We're not putting a dollar figure in here in case we're off by a few cents and don't want to have to come back and spend more of your time doing this.
And the anticipated interest is $8.10, is that?
No, the total anticipated interest is somewhere between $35,000 and $40,000.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We're still working with the EAC to determine the exact rate and the compounding.
This is for March, April, and May of 2008. It's $8.10. Is that?
Mr. Chair, the $8 may be on that $620.
Okay. Right. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now, is there going to be an impact to the general fund by doing this? I'm trying to understand the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, there's not an impact to the general fund. We're taking funds in our budget that
right.
are general fund funds.
Right.
But we're not asking for additional general fund funds to
sure.
do this.
Okay. Are there any questions on this bill, which ultimately has got to go to the Finance Committee, as all our bills do? Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 3649 as amended?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Can I ask a question about this interest, this delayed interest? So if the money had been put in a year earlier and that interest had been earned, whose money would it be now? Would it have been the federal government's, or why are they quibbling about this amount?
Mr.
Fraser.
Chair, Senator Roebling, the Help America Vote Act money is different than most federal money in that all of the interest stays in the possession of the state but has to be spent for the Help America Vote Act activities. My understanding is that usually with federal grants, the interest goes to the federal government. So it is Minnesota gets to keep the money and spend it on Minnesota election-related activities, but they want to be sure it's earmarked for those activities, and so they want it in that fund.
So we just have a little less money than we would have had if it would have been properly deposited. Is that the way it works?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, is it your intention to send this as a separate bill or include it in your budget bill?
I'm not aware that we're going to have a separate budget bill out of this division. It doesn't make any sense for me to have a budget bill.
I understand, but several divisions are actually putting together bills which are then being sent to the full finance committee to be incorporated into one bill.
I have not been notified that they're looking for any of that for me. In fact, I think that in the bigger...
Mr. Chairman, that was our discussion last night that we were going to do that.
Oh. Well, there's ultimately one bill. There's going to be one finance or one budget bill. Is that correct?
Right. But each division, it's my understanding, each division was putting together like a division article that could be in a bill.
Okay.
I suppose you could do it as an amendment, too. Whatever you want.
We
are doing
a
bill in my division, which then just gets sent to full finance committee, and he incorporates it.
Yeah, and I don't know how full finance wants to do it. I mean, we can send the bill to full finance, and if I'm directed to put together my share of it, I can assemble whatever was passed out of this budget division into something that we've already voted on. So they have the bill, and then they will have something that we can put together here. I'm flexible. I can do it either way.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just saying that was really my understanding. I mean, it was kind of a last-minute thing before we left the meeting last night.
I had to go to judiciary. Yeah.
Oh, you left the room.
I had to.
Oh, well, there was a debate over whether Senator Cohen would put together each division's bill and then come and present it to our division.
Okay.
Or whether our division would put together the bill and send it to him.
Okay.
And it was decided that that would be quicker and more expedient if each division put together their own bill and then sent it to full finance. So you just need a vehicle with your name on it.
Well, I can, if I put together, I can, would I need a, Mr. Botter, and would I need an actual bill to do something like that? I can just ask for something that's already in finance. Because all the bills are in finance anyway. We can assemble something. If they need
you
a bill,
always,
I can amend some bill that's sitting in finance. And do
and
that.
You, or you could put your, you know, substitute your name for someone's name.
Yeah. Sir Rest.
Mr. Chairman, it would be nice for the division to know what it is you'd be proposing. I mean, whether you do it there and just give us the language of what all is in there, I would certainly like to see that rather than just doing it in the full committee.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, ultimately, they're going to be looking for committee recommendations. I don't know the schedule for next week right now. I mean, no. I don't know when I'm going to have time to meet or when you're going to have time to meet because the policy committees are done meeting. So we just can't open it up that all budget divisions are going to meet whenever they feel like it because then you got chaos around here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my intention is that we're going to put our finance bill together during my committee time on Tuesday so that it's ready to go to full finance. He talked a little bit about having everybody, you know, the whole bill by next Wednesday. We just didn't think that was practical with the Easter break. Well, we sort of have a target. It's not real clear.
I haven't been told I've got a target.
It's not real clear. It's negotiable with the proposal that Senator Cohen presented last night.
But I think we have to start assuming, in this area, I'm assuming I'm going to get bigger cuts than maybe other areas because, I mean, I had a negative target last year, and so I have to start looking at what was assigned with the governor's proposal and then figure out, because I'm not going to get any new money. I know that.
Well, it seemed like it was just even just a 3% cut is what it seemed like.
That's true. Yeah.
Senator Roebling, I can talk to you about our division.
Okay. Yeah, I'm told that next week we will have Senator Larson's presidential primary bill in here, so we can use that as a vehicle. So I think I can just we can at least so that we've actually taken formal.
Are we going to pass that?
Yeah. We'll vote on this. I'll send a committee report to the Finance Committee, but then we'll assemble a bill here based upon the stuff that we've approved here. So it's just more paperwork to sit in the Finance Committee, and I'm okay with that. So Senator, is there any further discussion on Senate File 3649?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
You know, since this doesn't involve any general fund dollars, except it's kind of an internal housekeeping matter for them, I almost think we should just let this one go on its own. And not get it tied up in and the real budget bill.
Yeah, and that's true, Senator Roebling. I think that next week the Finance Committee is going to have some hearings because they've got a lot of bills stacking up there that have fee implications. They've had something with no fiscal notes or fiscal zero impact or whatever, and they've got to send some bills to the floor out of Finance Committee that, you know, went to the policy committees. This could very well be one of them. So
well,
that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, you could also do both.
Yeah.
You know, you could send Larson's bill to the floor, and you could also put it in your finance bill.
Well, that's why
depending what the House is doing, too.
If we send this to the Finance Committee, then if Senator Cohen decides that this doesn't need to be anywhere else and just to sail this out of finance to the floor, we can do that.
Okay.
But that won't happen unless Senator Larson moves that Senate File 3649 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee.
So moved.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Larson. And Senator Olson, we've got Senate File 3067, Business Reinstatement Fee Waiver for Returning Military Veterans. Welcome to the Budget Division, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that was brought to me by the Secretary of State, and it's a bill with a very, very small fiscal impact, less than $1,000 a year, and yet we can do something meaningful and significant for military members or civilians engaged in war-related activities who basically have to pay a reinstatement fee when they return from war-related activity, and basically we're waiving that requirement so that they will not have to pay that reinstatement fee. There was some concern about not wanting this to extend back to lapses that it had occurred in the distant past, and so council has suggested some language that I'd appreciate it if someone would be willing to offer as an amendment. That is would be an amendment on line 1.12 after the word year. I think it would be inserted, comma, beginning with calendar year 2007, comma.
I'll move that.
Okay. So state that again. After on line 1.12 after the word year, you want to insert the words beginning in calendar year
with.
It would be after the word, Mr. Chair?
No. Go ahead.
After the word year, insert comma, beginning with calendar year 2007, comma.
Mr. Bowden, you have that then? Okay. Okay. Somebody wish to move that then? Senator Olson? Senator Pappas moves that language. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion carries. Now, I guess I got a question. This is effective retroactively to January 1st, 2007. Do we know if there's been a lot of these issues coming up in the last year and a half?
Yeah, will they need refunds?
Pardon, Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, will they need refunds then?
I don't know. We're waiving the fee, but if people have already paid the fee, do they have to pay them back? What goes on here? Ms. Fraser or somebody?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't think that we have a good sense of whether there are people in the last year and a half. You know, we would have just said, okay, you owe us $25, and they would have paid the $25. Perhaps Mr. Bodern can say whether we could give people back their money. I don't know whether this language allows for that or not.
Well, it seems to me, though, I mean, you're making the bill retroactive to January 1st, 2007, and you're waiving a fee. So if somebody paid it, I think they've got a pretty good claim to say, you know, I paid the fee, and now you waived it, so I want my money back. So I think that's what the anybody's going to suggest. So,
and Mr. Chair,
also,
at another committee hearing, Secretary Ritchie testified that it was there were approximately 75 to 80 people a year that this would apply to.
That's what he said, wasn't it?
That's okay. There's about 7,500 businesses are dissolved. 750 require reinstatement. Estimated there are fewer than 5% have individuals who are deployed. So I guess that would come out with that. So. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard here on Senate File 3067? discussion. Discussion. Is there anybody who want to move the bill? We'll send this to finance. Mr. Bauer.
It may be a belt and suspenders approach, but it might not hurt to have additional authority to refund fees that may be waived under this section, given the discussion you just had.
Okay.
So I think you can accomplish that fairly easily on page 1 after line 18. Just insert a sentence that reads, the Secretary of State may refund any fees that are waived under this section.
Do you want to read it one more time to make sure people have it?
Sure. On page 1 after line 18, insert, the Secretary of State may refund any fees that are waived under this section.
Anybody wish to move that? Senator Rest moves the language as read by Senate Counsel.
Mr. Chair?
Senator, Ms. Fraser.
We can't refund fees that were waived. Perhaps it should have been waived or could have been waived or were charged or...
Refund. Mr. Chairman, what you could do would be provide a retroactive waiver. You could say refund any fees that are retroactively waived under this section, since we're providing a retroactive effective.
Yeah, you are retroactive of waiving fees.
Oh,
so
okay, yes.
Okay.
That would be my motion.
Okay. Senator Rest moves the language as read by counsel. Is there discussion on that motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, does that change the fiscal note to about $750,000?
It might.
Well, it originally had the effective date of 2007, though. So.
Well, but I don't think the issue of refunds had been raised. So we'll send it to finance, and they may have to just take another look at the fiscal note, which was prepared by the Secretary of State's office anyway, wasn't it? So the Secretary of State's office is going to have to look at the language and figure out if that...
Yes, Mr. Chair.
There. Okay. Okay. Somebody wish to move the bill then?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Rest moves at Senate File 3067. We adopt the amendment?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think we voted on it.
Okay, vote on the amendment. Okay, on the Rest motion to adopt the amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Rest moves at Senate File 3067 as amended. Be recommended pass be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Then the last bill that we have on our agenda is Senate File 3190, Senator Rest, blood donation leave authorization.
Mr. Chairman, since this bill was heard in state and local government, we've been working on with various parties to clarify what the privilege would be that's being given. And so, Mr. Chairman, I do have the A2 amendment.
Okay.
Also, members have fiscal note, and there was misunderstanding in fiscal note that has since been corrected, and this the number that's here is not the accurate number, and there would we'll have somebody come forward that will just explain what the glitch was and that it's been fixed.
Okay.
But the what the A2 amendment does, which I am moving, is to clarify that the blood donation would be taking place away from the place of work. We know that state employees are sometimes the blood banks come around to the various state office buildings. That's not what this leave would be. It would be someone who's going out to a blood bank. We were encouraged to lessen the impact by making sure that an employee gave at least 2 weeks notice to the employer that they were going to be doing this, so that there wouldn't be any occasion for granting overtime to that, in order to make sure that that employee's work effort was being covered. And then what was added as well is that we do mean
state employees as is commonly defined, and we were asked to make sure that, to clarify that it did not mean employees of MNSCU. It means employees of our state agencies. So that is the those two things. Well, actually, the 14 days notice was already in the bill. What is added in our amendment is a location away from the work, from work, and the clarification of what we mean by state employee.
And let's see, you and I and Senator Roebling and Senator Pappas and Senator Larson serve on the state and local government operations committee, and we did hear some testimony, some concerns about critical shifts being shorthanded and so forth. So, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, do you know if anybody knows how to turn this off? I'm having difficulty hearing over the noise here.
No, we haven't adopted yet. So. We'll give it a shot. Just unplug it.
I tried to turn it off, but I don't know if it was letting me.
If you pull the plug,
it's hot.
Unplug it.
Unplug it.
I think the black plug on the...
That should do it.
Wow. Thank you. Oh, much better.
Chairman Betzold, members of the committee, I'm Jared Jordahl with the Department of Employee Relations. I am embarrassed to say that we did make a mathematical error in our original fiscal note. Okay. And we will be redoing the note, of course, to reflect that MNSCU is now being deleted from the bill. And the correct numbers on the fiscal note should be an overall cost estimate of $123,750 per year, and $39,600 of that would be general fund, and $84,150 would be all other funds. That's based on determination that we use at Dewar that there are 33,000 state employees, approximately excluding MNSCU. The average salary of state employees, excluding MNSCU, is $25 per hour, or just about $52,000 per year. And that 5% of the 33,000 available employees would utilize all 3 hours of this leave.
And, Mr. Chairman, we were further informed, if you look at also the assumptions, that the cost would be assumed by the agencies and that they're stated in terms of lost, quote, productivity rather than any kind of money cost, if you will, to the agencies.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. I appreciate that correction from Senator Rust.
The assumption was that all employees would be taking advantage of it? Or how many?
Mr. Chair, the assumption was that 5% of the 33,000 non-MNSCU state employees would perhaps use this and use all 3 hours that they're granted.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rust, yeah.
Mr. Jordahl, currently how many state employees of the kind we're talking about here take advantage of a blood donation to the blood banks that come around?
Blood mobiles and so forth, yeah. Mr. Jordahl?
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Rust, Dewar does not track that information. In the state labor contracts, we do provide paid time off, and it's just sort of check with your supervisor, and the employees are allowed to go. We don't track that time. The visits of the blood mobiles are arranged by the Department of Administration, and we're very interested in the blood mobiles coming whenever they'd like, and I'm afraid we don't have numbers of how many state employees take advantage of the blood mobiles.
And there may be a difference between the blood mobile showing up at the Capital Area Complex as opposed to Greater Minnesota, where somebody works at a DNR facility, they have to go across town to the blood bank and so forth. So,
Mr. Chairman, I am informed that the next time the blood bank will, well, not the blood bank, but the mobile thing will be here is on April 4th. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that if the bill moves to the full finance, I would appreciate that and also appreciate it being considered for the supplemental appropriations bill,
sure.
However that's being put together. And when it does come up in finance, we will have the adjusted fiscal note so that it's totally accurate.
Would it make sense to just hold the bill here until we get the full
Either
fiscal
way.
Note? Why don't we just keep it here and get the revised fiscal note? We still have to have a meeting next week or so, and who knows, maybe your bill might be the vehicle for the omnibus thing that I sent. Senator Olsen, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, is there any provision for, like, turning in a receipt that or something that documented that somebody actually gave the blood?
There you go. Senator
Olsen. Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I work with people that if they could get three hours off, they'd be gone, you know. So I'm wondering.
Come back going, oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Cookies and a band and some juice. So, right.
If there, would you be open to a provision? I don't know what, you know, if there's some kind of documentation that they actually gave blood, do you think that would be appropriate, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Olsen, under the, as Mr. Jordahl mentioned, under the current system, when they go out to the blood mobile, they don't ask them to bring anything back. They assume that they are doing it, and it is, you know, it's 3 hours in a whole year. And it may not even take that long if the blood bank is close by or in a small town, if it's, you know, 2 or 3 blocks away. It's my experience, although I've not done it very frequently, that I have given blood, and it certainly didn't take 3 hours. So I think that is, if someone is found to be abusing it, their supervisor will be able to find it out without putting an exception in the law.
And I don't see anything in the language here that would preclude DOOR or a state agency from requiring some documentation or something to come back to show that the person
they
actually
could do it
did.
On their own.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not prescribing it, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. So,
Senator
Olsen,
and I do appreciate Senator Rest's efforts to reduce the number of people involved, because I think when we first started looking at it, it was all public employees, and now we're down to just state employees, which we do have more control over, and we have excluded the Minsky employees. I guess I just kind of have an issue with it in that we do offer as many opportunities as possible to have blood donated on site, as I pointed out in the other committee, if you have three hours of time off at $25 an hour, it's worth $75 for a donated pint of blood. And it's, you know, it's taxpayers picking up the costs. And it's something that I just kind of question, because I know the Bloodmobile folks were here from the Red Cross, and they, you know, one of the things that I think they should be talking more about is extending their evening hours more, having Saturday collections. You know, if they want more people to donate blood, they have to make it more convenient for working people to do it instead of coming here asking us to give people time off of work in order to do it. And I donate blood, and I do have trouble doing it during sessions, so I choose to use the one that comes here on site. But I just think that it really should be more their responsibility to make this more available, to maybe go to churches on Sunday mornings and collect blood, or, you know, it's just too easy for them to come here and ask us to give employees time off at taxpayers' expense to donate, which then, you know, you start wondering if that's a real donation or not. And Senator Rest, just one question. When we say donate, do we mean that they can't get paid for it? Because there's places that pay for blood donations, and they're still called blood donations.
I don't know. It doesn't quite specify in here. I mean, it doesn't. The employee isn't charged for it, but if the employee goes to sell blood, is that, that might be possible under this, is it?
I really don't know. It seems to me donation is a gift.
Yeah.
It is not people that allow their blood to be taken for sale sell their blood. They're not donating it.
Maybe that's a qualifier.
I don't believe that's the case for the blood mobiles either. When they come, they're not buying your blood.
Right. And although we do have the blood mobiles and we set up times, I mean, sometimes people donate blood because maybe there is an emergency within the family situation, and that's the time that they, you know, need to go donate blood. I was in the Army in Germany, and my mother had some surgery back here in Minnesota, and I went to donate blood. Now, my blood wasn't shipped across over to her, but it was credited to some account, and but they needed it then, and so I was able to donate it, and it worked out. But so it might be that, you know, somebody is looking for time off simply because that's the family emergency that they have to deal with at that moment. So,
but Mr. Chair,
Sarah Roebling.
But they do have time they can take. They can take personal time.
Sure.
They can take vacation time. You know, maybe it could even be counted as sick time.
Yeah.
You know, there's something that's health related. I just question whether we should have to say that they can have three hours.
Yeah.
I mean, cheap here.
Well, as I say, we're going to lay it over. Well, let's adopt the A2 amendment first. And then we'll lay it over to get the revised fiscal note, so we'll have some additional time to think about it if you want to bring forth any ideas here. So Senator Rest moves the A2 amendment to Senate File 3190. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Is there any further discussion on Senate File 3190 as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I would request the bill be laid over.
Yeah, we'll lay it over, and then we'll look for the new fiscal note. And Senator Roebling, if you've got any further thoughts, we'll certainly talk about it next time we take it up next week. Okay? Okay, anything further before coming for us? Well, have a good break. See you next week. You've earned your break. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
It's all right, Bill.
It's okay.